Hello, and thank you for tuning in to community-supported WDRT. You're listening to The Skeptical Naturopath with Paul Rattay and Christina DeRocher. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Christina. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good. So we're talking about certainty.
Yes, certainty.
How to be certain. I feel like we need to pronounce our T's.
That's the diction that I have. I'm very... I have to pronounce everything precisely.
Good. We're on the same page then.
Yes. Certainty. So what do we mean by that? We want to know for sure that something's happening. What's going to happen? When am I going to die?
Yes. Right. Tell me what to expect.
Tell me what to expect. I want to know this is going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Especially with health.
Especially with health.
If I do this, this will happen. If I don't do this, that will happen.
Yeah. And think about what health used to be, again, 200 years ago compared to today.
Okay.
Is health the absence of disease? Or is health this well-being, this vitality that we feel? Is it like the chi is flowing, or we experience flow, or we're mentally alert and physically active? Like, what do we mean by health? It seems like it's been framed as the absence of disease.
Yes.
I don't have this.
Right. And not looking at what is my quality of life.
Yeah, not what's my quality of life. What's the length of my life?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this is the idea of health. You know, our life expectancy is real long. The question is, what's our health? You know, what's the life quality expectancy? Right? So, I mean, I've often said I'd rather die a minute too early than an hour too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is, you know, how am I doing? You know, am I physically active? Am I able to do the things that I, quote unquote, want to do?
Right. And if you're declining, how can you have certainty that what you're going to be trying is going to work?
Yes. And keep in mind that we tend to also delay intervention.
Of course.
Like, we don't go to the doctor at age 30 and say, hey, you know, I'm really worried about what's going to happen to me in 20 years.
Right.
But honestly, that's an important... It's an important piece, right? It's an investment. It's insurance in your health quality is what you do when you're 20 and 30 and 40. It's not what the insurance company provides for you. It's what are you going to invest in your health?
Yes, although most of us aren't thinking about that probably.
No, we're not thinking about that. Some of us are forced to think about it, and others of us are not forced to think about it. I mean, my story, maybe I've shared this before, is right. I didn't know I had digestive issues till I didn't have the issues.
Oh, right.
Because I went to Japan when I was 22, spent 4 months there, and my digestive system completely turned around.
And you didn't even know that that was an expectation that you could have.
I sort of knew. Like, I mean, I had constipation, and I would have had IBS, like, would have been my diagnosis, mm-hmm. irritable bowel syndrome. And, I mean, I never went to a doctor. It was just kind of like, well, that's just my digestive system, right? That's the way it is.
Right. Right.
And then I go to Japan. I'm like, oh my gosh, wow. I'm supposed to feel this way? Like, this is great. Like, I don't want to go back to how I was feeling before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hear that all the time too with people. They do a detox diet, right? They take everything out of their diet. And I mean, you could go keto, or you could do an elimination diet. You could go on a low fat diet, right? There's all sorts of variations on a theme on this. And they do it, and they're after the 30 days, they're like, oh my gosh, I feel great. I feel wonderful. And then the question is, okay, but you want to feel great every day for the next 30 years. So is there something that you're doing right now that made a difference that can that translate to long-term compliance so that you can continue to feel this way?
What's sustainable?
Yeah, what's sustainable? I mean, it's just like I you know, have patients do a ketogenic diet for a short period of time is generally what I do. 2 weeks. Maybe it turns into 4 weeks, but generally 2 weeks. And then they, you know, I have them add carbohydrates back into their diet. So they do that, and then, you know, I ask them at the end of the 2 weeks or the end of the 4 weeks, at the end of the experiment, so how do you feel, right? We're doing this based on how you feel. I'm not doing it for your blood pressure. I'm not doing it even for your weight. I mean, people want to lose weight, and that's fine, but how do I know that you're losing weight? You step on a scale.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is, are you losing weight right now compared to yesterday? Like, are you actively losing weight right now? Like, 'cause that's what we want.
Right.
Like, we want you constant, like, losing a little weight all the time. Like, be in that state. How do I know that? Do I wait, like, 3 months and then you step on a scale? Or you step on a scale every day? Or, like, six times a day? And are you going to get that? Because did you just drink some water? Did you have a bowel movement? Because that's going to make a difference in your weight.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anyways, but the whole idea is, how do you feel? Right? The feeling part. And so they come back and it's been 2 weeks and they say, oh, I feel great. Or, you know, not everybody. Some people feel worse, right? I have to be honest here that it's not the end all be all for everybody. But right. They've done something, right? They've taken things out of their diet. They've changed things. They've balanced their blood sugar, right? They're not on gluten. They're not on sugar. They're not on caffeine. They're not drinking alcohol. All these things.
Mm-hmm.
They say, oh my gosh, I feel great. Best I felt in 10 years. I'm like, yeah, okay. So now what do we do long term? Oh, but I'm bored. I want to eat, you know, I want to eat a piece of cake. I'm like, well, you can eat a piece of cake. But at some level, these symptoms that you had previously are going to come back.
Depending on how much you incorporate what you were doing before.
For sure.
Yeah.
But the idea is that you got to a point pretty quickly, right? That's my motivation, is that I want people to feel better quickly, mm-hmm. so that you know that you're doing something and that it works. Now, it may be extreme, but you felt better. So I'm willing to punt on that and say, hey, you know, let's just take all the carbs out and see what happens. And, you know, also take out dairy and take out eggs and take out alcohol and take out caffeine, right? All those things.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see, hey, I get better quick, right? Because I don't have any other tools to give you, right? And so you come and see me. I say, well, you could take a supplement. They're not generally magic bullets. I mean, they can help. But the idea is, oh, I want you to change your diet. And people are like, oh, yes, sign me up. I want to change my diet. No, I want you to do something. Give me the magic pill so that I don't have to worry about this any longer. And my pain goes away or my energy is better. And I can do all these things. I'm like, oh, well, you know, this is an investment and it's lifestyle. Anyways. They feel better. Now the question is, what do they do? How far can they stray and continue to feel better?
Right.
That's the magic. Right. That's the magic. Well, that's the $10,000 question, right? Or what is it? $10
million. $10
million
question.
Yeah, it used to be $10,000. That's $10 million.
Inflation.
Inflation. So, but and what do you need to do? How far do you need to go? And maybe it's you just took out alcohol and it made a difference. Maybe you took out gluten and made a difference. I don't know, right? So the certainty is the idea that, well, you did something and it helped, and now we got to, like, you mean I got to, like, kind of experiment with this and see?
Mm-hmm.
And this gray area, right? Mm-hmm. The health is really kind of a gray area, or it is a gray area. It's not black and white. But when we couch that in disease terms, you have the disease or you don't have the disease.
Right.
You have high cholesterol or you don't have high cholesterol. And if that happens, then we have an intervention for that. And the intervention is a no-brainer. You can just, you know, take a pill. Instead of saying, oh, well, wait, there's a lot of variables here, and which variable is more important? Oh, it's just blood pressure and cholesterol. Well, again, easy, it's measurable. We've got ways to manipulate that. I mean, you can do it pharmaceutically, you can do it naturally too. There's certainly natural things that can help. Not as strong as the pharmaceuticals, but again, if your goal is just to get your cholesterol down, that's one thing. The other thing is, do I feel better? But when people come back and say, wow, you know, I'm not hungry and this is the best I've felt in 10 years and I have all this energy. And I'm like, wow, that's really important.
Right.
But can I measure it? How do I measure your energy level?
I suppose by how much you can get done, how many times you need to sit and rest.
Yeah, right. There's no way. And you're going to tell me, I'm going to give you sort of a subjective questionnaire to say, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your energy like?
Oh, yeah.
And where was it before and where is it now? But you come back and say, wow, this is the best I felt in 10 years. I'm going to bet that your energy is significantly improved.
Right.
Like, we know that, whether it's 80% improved or 20%, I don't know. And, you know, I'm kind of an engineer type. That's how my brain works. And I want to know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really qualify that or quantify that.
Right.
So we have this unknown variable. So people come in and they say, you go to a conventional doctor or even to me and you say, well, I'm tired. I'm tired all the time. I hear that all the time.
I'm sure.
So I can rule things out. Yes. So I rule out that you're not anemic.
Mm-hmm.
I rule out that you don't have hypothyroidism. Like, those are important, right? Mm-hmm. Those are things that contribute to fatigue. But if you don't have anemia and you don't have hypothyroid, then it's like, oh, well, there's nothing wrong. But wait, I'm tired all the time.
Right.
Oh, well, maybe there's some other quote-unquote functional imbalance. Maybe there's another variable there that we can't really measure and we can't control. Stress, diet, exercise. Yeah, I mean, that's all that lifestyle stuff. That's the
investment.
Well, we can't control in an environment to say, here's the variable that makes a difference on that, right? In research world, right, I guess I should kind of talk about this because I, you know, this is kind of what's the limits of nutritional research, because I spend a fair amount of time looking at the research. I'm interested in the research, but the research doesn't really give me, firm answers to say I can hang my hat on this. It's a little bit like, how am I going to interpret that? And not that I'm going to ignore it, but I can't really just put it on a pedestal and say, this is it. But nutritional research, right? So we can do studies in various ways. So we do a randomized controlled trial or a randomized clinical trial, right? An RCT. Mm-hmm. This is considered to be the gold standard in experiment mode, right? So that means that we take a group of people and we're going to test something. Mm-hmm. We're going to test, let's say, fish oil and cardiovascular disease.
Okay. Right?
So we pick a group of people, so we have to pick a cohort. Like, what are our criteria? Do we want to include five-year-olds in this study? Do we not? So we say, okay, we only want people aged, 45 to 65. Mm-hmm. And we may say you may have, two risk factors for cardiovascular disease. Maybe high blood pressure, maybe insulin resistance, or something that would tell us that you're at an increased risk of cardiovascular disease. And then we include you in the group. And then we got to decide, do we want men and women? Do we just want men? Do we just want women? Do we include everybody? But that's what we control, right? We control that group of people that we choose from. So then we enroll people in the trial. Mm-hmm. I say, whoever's doing that, right? They say, come on in. And if you're between the ages of this and this, and we'll see if you qualify. And then you can, be either on fish oil or not on fish oil. You won't know. But then we randomize people to one group or the other. Mm-hmm. So we randomize to the fish oil group or we randomize them to a placebo group.
Okay.
And then we go ahead and do the treatment. And how long do we do the treatment?
Right.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Like, how long do you need to take fish oil to see some effect on cardiovascular disease? And how do we know that it's affected cardiovascular disease? Like, what's our outcome? Like, what are we measuring?
Right.
Are we just saying, we're just going to measure your blood pressure, or we're going to measure your cholesterol levels? And actually, you won't find fish oil does much to help either one of those.
Oh.
It will lower your triglycerides, but actually does not lower your cholesterol. You may actually see your LDL go up slightly when you take fish oil. So you're like, don't take fish oil. Again, we're not using that as a criteria. So how do we know that it works?
I suppose you would go back to, how do you feel?
You think we do that in a trial, that we give people fish oil or not fish oil, and then you do it for 3 months or 6 months and say, well, how do you feel?
No.
But
maybe we should.
But that's what I do in the clinic, yes, right? Yeah. When I see somebody, I'm interested in what I call the N of one, right? The one person in front of me. Like, what's going on with you? Like, where are you at? Like, what's working? What's not working? What are you eating? What's your stress level like? And then I adapt and try to give them things that may work within that framework. But you give them fish oil, and we say, we'll do it for 6 months or 5 years or 10 years, or how long are we going to do it? And the longer we do a trial, what does that mean generally?
The more variables probably enter in.
Perhaps, but when it's fish oil or not fish oil, that's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Right? Because either you took the pill or you didn't. Maybe because you're doing it for 10 years that you forget more, or you blow it off, but whatever they do to try to maintain compliance or understand that. But what's other issues with this, though, do you think?
I go back to other things that you're doing that may...
Variables that may influence your cardiovascular disease, right? And can we control for those?
Did you stop eating meat altogether and become vegetarian?
Exactly.
And the fish oil is the only animal product that you're consuming now?
Exactly. And did you make the change at the same time or not? So there's all these other variables. Mm-hmm. But understand, that's why we randomize. That's why we have a group of people that are relatively similar, right? Similar in that they're the same age, same sex, if that's the case or not.
Right.
Similar risk
profile.
Yes. So we have that to choose from, but then we randomize them to one or the other. By randomizing, we're controlling for all of those unseen variables, like your stress level and your diet, because how are we going to control for that? Are we going to put the vegans in one group and the carnivores in another group, and then the people that have high stress in one group and then low stress? And then how do we determine what's high stress and low stress? Plus, how are we going to predict what your stress level is going to be 6 months from now?
And isn't there also something called, I want to say it's the Hawthorne effect or something.
Oh, yeah, the Hawthorne.
where when you put emphasis on your health, for instance, as we're using in this example, that things change just by giving them attention.
Yeah, that was I think that was the lighting. Was that the lighting trial where they did more yes, light or less light?
That's right.
And they found they were more productive, but because they were being watched.
Right.
It had nothing to do with the light.
Correct. They were aware that they were being watched. And so, for instance, if I were doing this trial and taking the fish oil, I would hope that I was in the group that was taking the fish oil. Probably just because I'm an overachiever type A personality, I would say, and you know what? This just gives me a great excuse. I'm going to start yoga too, right?
Exactly.
Because now somebody cares about me, right? Like you just internalize the fact that somebody cares about you. Now they're watching you to see how your health is affected by this obviously good thing, right? I mean, everybody knows that fish oil can be a good thing. It's certainly not asking them to start smoking. And maybe I, you know, lower my stress. Maybe I'm going to change jobs as well. I'm just being, you know, a little, you know, exaggerated. But my point is there something to that as well where they go, you know what, I'm being watched. And yes, I'm doing this fish oil thing, but it's also giving me an excuse to focus on my health a little bit and think about, are there other things that I'd like to start right now too? It's kind of like a New Year's Day effect where you're like, you know what, and I'll also change jobs and maybe I'll move to the country. You know, I mean, how do you, I don't know, I don't mean to skip to the punchline, but it seems like N of one is really, really important. When you really look at the details of these so-called studies, there's just no way that you can know without doing things yourself.
Of course. So this is, so in the trial, when we have that, what you're talking about, of course, is an issue. So this is why people need to be blind.
Yes.
So blind meaning you don't know that you're doing fish oil versus you know you're doing fish oil. Because you're just the type of person that you're like, hey, I'm in a trial. I'm going to change my behavior. So it's like, wow. So let's put you in a trial all the time because then you're going to change your behavior.
Right.
So I have patients use MyFitnessPal. I don't know if you've ever, you know, MyFitnessPal.
Yeah.
It's an online app that they can track their diet.
Right.
And I say, well, you can friend me on there because I do a lot of my follow-ups by phone. They can friend me and they can allow me to look at their diet.
I know what's happening here.
So they'll do that. And many people, many patients don't even do that. But the ones that do, they'll friend me. And because I like to know food notes, too. So
absolutely.
MyFitnessPal is like, I care about how you feel when you're eating this, not just how many carbs
eating.
Or how many calories,
right.
Which is fine. But I'm interested in the subjective experience of this. And they'll do that. And some people think that I spy on them.
Right.
And the thing is, if they think that I'm spying on them and that they make better choices because I'm spying on them, I will say, oh, well, you know, every night before I go to bed, I check up on you. And I know what you're doing. Right? They're like, oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
But again, the idea that they're being watched.
Leftover
right,
chocolate
sure.
cake for breakfast?
Yeah.
Paul's watching.
Yeah,
I better have
watching,
yogurt.
Yeah. But then I have some patients that come in and they deliberately are eating poorly before they come in and they keep a three-day diet diary and they say, oh, well, this is because I know you're going to, I'm going to have to change everything. So this is my last hurrah.
right.
People are funny, yes.
Yes.
And we will respond differently to different things.
Yes.
But that's why we want blinding. So at least you don't know whether you're taking fish oil or you are taking fish oil.
So how do people not know? They're given
because
something.
Because it's a placebo. It's going to look exactly the same.
Okay. Got it. Sorry. So, not a scientist.
No, that's okay. So that's relatively easy to do with a supplement. Easy to do with a drug.
Right.
For drugs are very simple. And understand that drugs, for the most part, are much stronger, have a much stronger physiological effect than fish oil is going to have.
Right.
Meaning that if we, and that's what these RCTs, randomized controlled trials, were really designed for.
I forgot what time we started.
Oh, no. We're at, 19 minutes.
Okay, perfect. I'm going to break right now and say thank you so much for listening listening to community-supported radio, WDRT. I would like to let you know that the 10th in a series, a year-long series that Paul Ratté is offering is coming up on Saturday, October 14th from 8:30 until 10 in the morning. He will be hosting the first half an hour will be a Q&A, and then there will be an hour-long presentation. And the newest topic for October is moderation is a fatal thing.
Or moderation, but yes, moderation.
Okay.
We love that, yes.
Okay.
Oh, I don't eat that much sugar. I don't drink that much alcohol. I don't drink that much coffee. Really, it's very little. Mm-hmm. Right? That's rationalization and moderation. So that's always the answer, moderation, instead of, wait, I need to really have strict limits on what I do. And maybe it's none.
Right, right.
No coffee is acceptable. I don't know.
So bring
that's next month.
So bring your questions of any stripe. You don't even have to ask questions about moderation. It can be any questions. And he will do a Q&A the first half an hour and then present the topic for an hour. It is free will donation, and it's hosted at the Commons on Jefferson Street. So that's Saturday, October 14th.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to write down what I need to say it again.
So back to RCTs.
Yes.
Let's go back to the science. So they're really, I mean, this kind of trial and the design of this has been done since, I think, World War II, right? After World War II. And this is kind of when drug research takes off. So it really fits well with drug testing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have a strong physiological effect that we could probably do a drug study and do something for 3 months and see the effect. Whereas fish oil, it may be, well, do we see that effect right away? Maybe you need to be on it for 10 years. Maybe you need to be on it for 20 years. And that's harder to
monitor,
test.
Yeah.
And are we going to see these changes in the short term? And I mean, there are some long-term trials done on fish oil, but generally I'd say 3 years, 5 years that we'd expect to see some change on that. And I don't know, is it kind of like a lifestyle supplement? You're just like, oh, that doesn't matter. I'm going to just take fish oil for the rest of my life. Okay, well, I mean, you could do that. I mean, then we look at risk benefit of that.
Right.
But regardless, so at least a supplement can be tested in a kind of a randomized placebo-controlled environment. What about diet? Can we control so what do we do with diet when we want to do a diet trial?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Can we blind somebody?
A lot of variables there.
Oh my gosh.
And you can't eat a placebo side of kale.
And if you're
it is kale.
If you are randomized to a low carbohydrate diet or you're randomized to a low fat diet, do you know that you're on a low carb diet or a low fat diet?
You would think so.
You would think so, unless somehow we're going to make some kind of smoothie that you're going to drink every day that you can't discern the amount of fat, protein, carbohydrate in it.
And then doesn't
But that's
that,
not free living.
Right, and doesn't that have an effect as well on
For
the
sure.
digestion of it and the, I mean,
For sure.
A liquid diet, that can't be.
Right, so we want free living. We want people kind of doing their thing, right, living their life. And we randomize them so that supposedly we're controlling for stress, we're controlling for exercise, we're controlling for some of these other variables. But just understand, when you randomize, it's possible that it's randomized in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. But you're randomizing. You don't control that. All you control is that initial cohort that you have. So what variables are we going to control for, right? Age, sex, risk factors, this kind of thing. But we can't control for everything.
Mm-hmm.
We can't. And then we go ahead and give you a diet or, you know, one diet or the other diet, or maybe it's just a control diet. You just continue to eat what you're already eating, right? So I'll use my favorite study, and it's probably actually 5 years old. It's called the Diet Fitz trial. So the Diet Fitz trial is they took a group of people, and men and women, and they were at risk of cardiovascular disease, and it was actually a clever trial. So they randomized them to one of two diets, either a healthy low-fat diet or a healthy low-fat diet. So healthy, let's put that in parentheses, but what we're talking about is not just about eliminating carbohydrates, it's not just about eliminating fats. They also deliberately said, we want you to be not eating in the supermarket, don't eat at home, eat as much as you can, freshly prepared foods, stay away from processed foods, stay away from added sugar. They told that to both groups, right? So these are, quote unquote, I would say healthy principles.
Yeah.
But one group is, you know, on a low fat side, and the other one is on a low carb side. So they're trained, or they're
aided.
Working with them to give them ideas and suggestions on how to do that. And they did this, I think, for a year. I think it was a year long trial. And what's interesting is that then after they were randomized, so they have a group of people and they're randomized to either the low fat or the low carb, and they both receive sort of information on how to eat healthier within that framework.
Right.
So understand there's no control group here.
Right.
Because both groups had an intervention.
Right.
So we're not comparing you to somebody that did nothing. We're
right.
comparing you to this.
Yeah, low fat or low carb.
So the second part of this is that after they were randomized, then they did further testing on them, because the researchers said that, hey, look, there's some people that are going to do better on a low carb diet and some people that are going to do better on a low fat diet. And how could we determine that? And they can do a couple of things. There's some there's a gene profile you can do to look at how well people metabolize fats.
Mm-hmm.
And that if they show a certain gene profile, that they may do better on a lower fat diet. And then on the other side, they did an insulin resistance test. So they could determine if somebody was insulin resistant, that they would perhaps do better on a low carbohydrate diet, right? Mm-hmm. But the clever part of this is they randomized the people first. So that means there were people of that group of, let's call them 1,000 people.
Uh-huh.
Let's say 550 of them would be better suited to a low-carb diet. 450 would be better to a low-fat diet. But I don't know what those numbers are. But then they put them
all in a pot together, so to speak.
And they were already randomized to one group or the other. So some people were randomized properly based on their insulin resistance.
And some not.
And some not. And then some were properly randomized to the low-fat, that they should be on a low-fat, or what the researchers say should be a low-fat, and others not. See, so this is clever because now they're doing this. There's like
four
parts.
They're almost having four parts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they can see, okay, somebody that should be on a low carb diet, like, and they're on a low fat diet, does it make a difference?
Right.
So very clever trial.
Right.
And so they did this. And what were the results?
I'm going to say that in general, there were no huge changes.
No changes.
Anyone.
It didn't make any difference if they were randomized properly or not.
And yet I got so excited at the same time. I kind of knew how it was going to end, yeah. But I thought, yeah, that is really smart. You basically have four groups within two. That's very clever.
Yeah. But so, we did all this study, we did all this research, and the results were like, didn't tell us much. Now understand, both groups had healthy diet interventions, right? So they were counseled to do some things that perhaps if you did that, and it doesn't matter whether you're low carb or low fat, and you eat more food prepared at home, you don't eat processed food, you don't do that, that who cares if you're eating carbs or fat? I'm just saying,
yes.
we can't make that determination.
Yes.
Because they counseled both groups on that, right? So they offered the same advice to both of them. So now, so that's the trial of that. And what's interesting is, this gets to my idea of averages, and, you know, on average, they didn't do better.
Right.
So that's an average. Understand that an average, that we take all 500 people in one group, or however many, I don't remember however many, and we average and say, on average, they lost 2 pounds over a year.
But that means somebody lost 10 and somebody lost...
Yeah, somebody lost 50 and somebody gained 20.
Right.
Or whatever,
yes.
Right? So that's why averages are a little bit misleading. That's why I like histograms. So a histogram means a picture.
Right.
And I'm a visual guy anyway, so I like to see that. But a histogram will tell me every single person, and then it'll list their weight loss or weight gain over a long, you know, on a graph.
Right.
So you can kind of see that, and you get a perspective on that. And of course, there's outliers when
always.
You see this.
Yeah.
There's outliers. There's people that were on the low-fat diet that lost a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that on a low-fat diet that gained weight.
Right.
And the same thing in the low-carb group.
Right.
And you're like, whoa, what's this? And honestly, when you look at those trials, you're like, when I see that, I'm like, oh, who are those outliers? And what were they doing? Like, I want to know what that outlier was doing that lost 40 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about them. Like, I want to talk to them. But again, that's an N-of-1 piece.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
So what were they doing that maybe they were more compliant on the diet versus somebody that wasn't compliant? Because I'm going to argue that people that gained weight in either group weren't compliant on the diet.
Okay.
But I can't say that for sure. I'm making that assumption.
Right,
yes.
Right.
But the whole idea is that we're not qualifying that, right? There's nothing to tell me, like, but tell me the story. So this is what's interesting too. So somebody, some blogger, took that information and must have talked to the researchers and interviewed 4 people. So they got 4 people, and guess what? One of each group. So they had somebody that was on a low-fat diet with success. Somebody on a low-fat diet that gained weight, somebody on a low-carb diet that lost weight, and somebody on a low-carb diet that gained weight. And she interviewed them.
Uh-huh.
Right, to kind of say, so what happened?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what did you do? Like, how was this? And what did they find? What was her conclusion? It didn't matter what diet they were following. It mattered other things that were going on in their life that made a difference on whether they were actually compliant with the trial.
Okay.
Were they following the rules of the trial, or did they stray on that?
Mm-hmm.
And understand, once you're in a trial and you're enrolled in the trial, the researchers are going to say, hey, even if you're not following the diet, we want you to stay in, because if you drop out of the diet, we lose you. We just want your data, right? We don't want to do a trial with 1,000 people and have 500 people drop out. Because I can do nothing with that.
Why?
Because you've lost half the people and you have no data on the people that are the half, that maybe they left because they gained weight. Do you understand this is attrition?
Kind of.
So this is a big deal in research land that generally we want at least attrition less than 20%.
But it strikes me like the 500 that are dropping out, you know, didn't want to do it, maybe wouldn't have been doing it well anyway, and the 500 that stayed probably are following the rules, and so you're going to get cleaner data.
Sure, but you're now manipulating that data. You're now putting qualifications on what you're doing.
The qualifications are that they're actually following the protocol.
But if I lose you to follow up, I don't know why I lost you to follow up. And I randomized you, right? So you were somebody randomized. So maybe I lost a lot of people in one group because that diet was too hard to follow. I mean, there's so many variables that happen here.
Yeah.
But researchers are going to just want to say, hey, we want to know, just stay in the trial.
Right.
And staying in the trial means that you answer my call at 6 months and you answer my call at 12 months, right? It's not like they're talking to people every week.
Right.
It's initial 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. That's the follow-up. So not like, oh, what happened between 6 months and 12 months? But anyway, so she interviews these people and it has nothing to do with the diet. It has to do with whether they were actually compliant on the diet. And people that failed, oh, well, something happened with work. I lost my job or I had a lot of stress and I couldn't continue to follow the diet. Like, oh, well, it's all just about compliance.
Right.
And what is it that enables you to follow a diet and do it for a year?
Sustainability.
And this is a year, right? It's sustainability.
Right. That you can actually do it.
Yeah. And then it doesn't matter whether it's low carb or low fat.
Wow.
Or, I mean, that's the take on what they did. But again, keep in mind they intervened with both people. So what are those healthy principles regardless of whether you're low carb and low fat?
Applying yourself.
Well, applying yourself, but, you know, not eating processed food.
Right.
And, you know,
right.
This kind of thing. Getting
rid
of junk in your diet. I mean, those are really important things.
Right.
And whether you go low fat or low carb, maybe that's a moot point.
Right. And if you were the N of one and not doing this particular experiment, maybe you would gravitate toward what is right for you intuitively, whether it's low fat or low carb. And as long as you're willing to, like you say, cut the rest out, then it's going to be beneficial for you.
Exactly. And then you know you're being watched too. Yeah. So you know you're on a low carb diet. And then they ask you, what did you actually do? Oh, I didn't eat that chocolate cake because I know I'm on a low carb diet. I didn't eat any of that. That didn't happen. And they'll be like, oh, don't lie, right? We just want the honest truth, right? And people will be like, wow, you really want the honest truth? And now I may be even more dishonest. But people are people, right? And some people are going to be very accurate. Some people are, you know, loosey-goosey.
Right.
They're going to kind of give you information or like, oh, can I draw you a picture? Versus an accountant that's going to be like, I counted everything.
Right.
I weighed my food, yes?
Yeah.
So you're going to have all types of that in this. But so what do we do with this kind of data? This is the research, and this is a well-designed trial that tells me almost nothing.
Right.
So then it would be like, well, why am I giving a low-carb diet to anybody? Because it doesn't make any difference. I just need you to, you know, not eat processed food, stay out of the fast food restaurant, eat with other people, exercise, though exercise is not anything to do with diet, but regardless, you know, healthy lifestyle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then maybe I just give people a healthy lifestyle. Why would I give them a ketogenic diet? Because my experience, N of one, says I do that with people, they feel a lot better, but I'm also only doing it for 2 weeks. I'm not doing it for 6 months.
Right.
I'm not doing it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, how long are you going to stay on a really aggressive diet? Good luck.
Yeah.
And their diet wasn't, I mean, the way they designed it too was that they were really low fat or really low carb for, I think, a month, and then they gradually increased it back to a level that they felt that they could maintain for the next, you know, for forever.
Yeah.
So they gave, they gave the subjects some ability to make the call on that. So they didn't try to keep them on a low carb diet for the whole year because they know people aren't going to stay on it.
Yeah, it's not sustainable.
So we're already doing research on things that we're not going to have really accurate data. We're just expecting people to fail. We're expecting them not to stay on it. And same thing with me, right? I give you a low-carb diet, not because I want you to do it for a year.
Right.
Now, I have some patients that maintain it long-term, but that's not even my goal. My goal is do you feel better? And let's do it for the shortest period of time to know that. But this is a big gray area, right? Because if I look at the research is not giving me firm conclusions on this. They'd be like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what diet you follow as long as it's a diet that you can follow. That's what all obesity researchers would agree on. Hmm. It doesn't matter the diet. It just matters the compliance. Hmm. Like, what are you going to do? Wow. That's the best we have to offer? And how much money have we spent on obesity research in this culture?
Oh, my gosh.
And is it a problem? We're at 35.
We are, yeah.
Yeah.
I could break early. I'll just break early now that there's a little break. Thank you for listening to Community Supported WDRT. I want to let you know about the 10th in a year-long series that Paul Rattay is hosting at the Commons on Jefferson Street from 8:30 until 10 in the morning on Saturday, October 14th. Paul will be giving an hour-long presentation of moderation as a fatal thing. And the first half an hour will be a Q&A, and you can bring questions of any stripe. This is a free will donation and the 10th of a year-long series.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
So back to the certainty thing, yeah? So then now we don't have any certainty in what we should do with our diet. So who do we trust? And because there's so much conflicting evidence, so much cognitive dissonance out there, it's like, well, I don't know what to do. Or maybe it's just there's so much out there that I'm going to do nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't make any difference.
I think a lot of people are at that point, you know, the whole joke about blueberries prevent cancer, blueberries cause cancer.
Right? Yeah, right,
like,
right.
That's kind of the running joke, is that next week we're going to learn that kale, you know, is like tiny shards of glass in your stomach. You know?
Yeah, so should we just ignore this? Is this important for us to fund research on? I mean, that's tax dollars. I mean, it's all sorts of funding that goes on to look at, does this make a difference? And how important is it? And I mean, that's what the NIH does, right? They have to figure out how to divvy up the research money to say, hey, this is important. This is important for us to research. But how can we really do really, you know, good research on diet? There's always going to be some variables on that. So is it more or less just kind of, you know, well, just try it on, see if it fits. That's the end of one, but we want to be certain so that we can tell the Americans or whoever, this is what you should be eating, right? Dietary Guidelines for Americans started in 1977. What now we're at the food plate?
Right.
You've seen the food plate?
Yes.
Used the food pyramid, then it turned into a plate. Mm-hmm. Like, we're dumbing it down so that people can understand it, and then it's like, oh, well, we're just talking about grains, or we're talking about fat, or we're talking about, you know, whether we're demonizing certain nutrients or not. And then we're like, oh, well, we should be eating low fat, or we should be eating, you know, low sugar, whatever, right? I mean, then it's like, well, is that true? And is it true for me? Is it not true for you? How do you apply that individually?
But it must be easier for doctors to use these studies and the food plate as a template.
Yeah, the food plate is simple. Then it's just follow the food plate. I don't have to think about it. Mm-hmm. But isn't that part of the problem, that we should be thinking about it? That
right.
we need to actually consider our well-being. And what are my goals? And does diet have something to do with how I feel? I mean, I'm biased, of course, that I think that diet does have something to do with you, how you feel. Is it everything? No, but it's something. And you can control it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's easy to control. And the society of ours tries to make it, you know, they kind of push the control in a level that, you know, we think we're doing healthy things that we may not be doing healthy things, because it's about consumerism, yes, and buying stuff. I'm buying healthy food.
Right.
What's healthy food? I mean, it depends on who you talk to.
Yeah, right. It's
all
relative.
Is meat healthy or is meat unhealthy?
Right.
And we demonize it for this reason or not. But anyway, so this is the issue. So something interesting on here, too, that this is the outlier thing, right? I already mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a book by Malcolm Gladwell. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
it's
the
outlier,
outliers.
Right? So this mm-hmm. is the whole idea. You know, I look at that and I say, oh, well, how do I become an outlier? Right. So what are the things that I do so that we see this graph curve, right? Or, for example, somebody says, well, you have cancer and you have, you know, 3 months to live, or you have 2 years to live. That's what you have. And some people will be like, oh, I have 2 years to live. And it's almost like they
believe it.
They believe it. And that's what happens. And other people may say, wow, this is terrible. Or other people say, well, how dare you? How can you pass judgment on me? And they may live longer. And mm-hmm. is it because that's the way they thought? I don't know. But does thinking, the framework that you have, influence what's going on in your immune system and your ability to fight cancer? I think it does,
right.
But I don't have any firm science to tell you. I can't tell you for certain that that's going to make a difference, but I certainly want you to be engaged, and I want that placebo working for you rather than against you, right? You know, placebo versus nocebo.
Right.
Nocebo is the negative effect. Placebo is the positive effect. So I don't care, right? We can blame anything as placebo, but the whole idea is that you're engaged and now you're doing things and you're taking charge and you're making different choices, right? Mm-hmm. Something that's within your control.
I mean, isn't it easy to prove that psychology has something to do with this? Just as we were talking about how when we know we're being watched, we tend to improve our behavior, you know?
But it's a little, this is kind of messy research, right? Do we have firm data to say how much this makes a difference? I mean, we see focused intentional healing helps, right? You know, focused intentional healing?
Right.
Prayer.
Yes.
But we don't want to say prayer. We got to say focused intentional healing.
Right. I think we're at time, aren't we? No.
No, no, no.
Oh.
We're only at 40.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
My goodness, I'm in another planet right now.
What planet is that?
You don't want to be here. I was going to tell you that I was listening to a Jordan Peterson interview, and he was interviewing a scientist who did a study on chambermaids. Are there still chambermaids around?
Oh, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. But anyway, she was saying that she asked them if they exercised, and most of them said no. You know, we're too busy and we get tired when we get home. And she took half the group and started sort of introducing them to how their work was related to exercises that they would do on a machine at a gym. And so basically infiltrating their thinking into this idea that they were actually exercising while at work. And she did not do that with the control group. And it turned out that later they could test body mass index and other, you know, physical traits that had improved in the group who had been told that they were actually exercising during work. So I think there are scientific studies that are proving that our psychology does have an effect on our physical well-being.
Yeah, it does. So yeah, and that's a simple thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so now we're just framing that. There was a trial done in the UK. I don't think it was ever published. I read something on it, and I was never able to find the trial, but it was called the FIT trial, because it was interesting that Diet Fits was the other trial. I think it was the FIT trial. And they took a group of people, and they typed their personality, right? So they did a Myers-Briggs.
Oh,
determine,
yeah.
Are you an introvert, extrovert? You know, are you...
IFNJ.
IFNJ, yeah. Yeah. And they do that, and then all they did for these people over, I think it was 12 weeks, is they had them do something that was opposite of their personality type. So if they were an extrovert, they had them do things that was more introverted. I don't remember exactly what they were doing, whether it was making phone calls if you're an introvert or something, right? Something that's uncomfortable.
Going to parties.
Outside your realm of comfort. And they didn't say anything about diet. They didn't say anything about weight or exercise or anything. And they followed people, and they found that at the end of 12 weeks that there was improvement across the board on that, and they didn't say anything about that. And all they did was have them change, you know, do something that was more uncomfortable for them.
Yes.
So again, whether it's like I'm being watched or something, but mm-hmm. there's some engagement, but you're seeing results from that. So that's the idea of like breaking out of that semi-conscious flow of existence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big piece. So, you know, it's like you could take somebody and you could wear two different pair of socks in the morning, right? When you wake up in the morning, wear two different pair of socks. What's that going to do? You know you have two different pair of socks on. Probably nobody else knows because you can't see that. But you may live your whole day saying, oh, my God, I'm wearing the wrong socks, right? And that may just cause you to be more awake on other things. Another crutch that they've talked about is to label your underwear Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, uh-huh. and then deliberately wear like Wednesday underwear on Monday.
Uh-huh.
And you'd be like, oh, I'm wearing the wrong underwear.
But it's all about jogging the consciousness,
exactly.
Right? Like getting,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Getting outside of that. So I wonder in the chambermaids, so it's just the idea there's that realization like, oh, I'm doing something,
yes.
Right? It's that engagement. We need to be engaged. It's the will forces, right? The will forces saying that I have control. I am, you know, I am doing something that makes a difference.
Right, right.
And that's possible when people follow a diet or do whatever. They're just engaged their will. And it has nothing to do with the diet. Maybe they could go on a McDonald's diet and would see benefit. I'm not willing to do that trial. Though the guy did the Twinkie diet. Do you hear the
right,
Twinkie diet? That
right.
He just ate junk food from them. But I still think he limited his calories.
Okay.
I
so he didn't overeat?
I don't remember. So yeah. I can't quote that. specifically. But yes, the mind's a powerful thing, and we want that included. And that's those are the variables that may make you an outlier, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you're engaged with this. Instead of saying, oh, I'm just going to follow this. I'm going to follow the standard. Here's what the numbers tell me. Here's the average. I don't necessarily want to be average. Or what are choices that I can make? What are those variables that we can't control for in a clinical trial?
Right. So why is it that when we go to our doctor that these aren't questions being asked about will forces and consciousness and feelings?
How much time do I have with you? How long does it take? I mean, so you need the narrative. Yeah, I spend 2 hours with a patient that first visit. Like, I need that time.
2 hours.
2 hours. I need their narrative. I need to know their story.
Yeah.
I ask patients, you know, I want to hear, tell me your story. And I don't care if you jump around. You could start, go forward, backwards, and skip around. I don't care, but I care about never well since. And I care about things that you've done and whether they've worked or not, because I don't need to do something that you've already done that hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm.
And just tell me your story.
Yeah.
And then that's the idea of letting them speak and letting them guide kind of where we need to go on this. And yeah, I mean, I have my biases that I'm going to assess your blood sugar, and I'm going to assess your liver detoxification pathways, and I'm going to assess your adrenal function and digestion. So those are that's the playing field that I'm on. But I'm still going to pay attention to where your story is. What have you been doing? What's worked? What are you willing to do?
Right.
Some people
right.
just want to take supplements. Other people don't want to take any supplements.
Yeah.
And again, it's like, okay, well, it's not my job just to tell you what you want to hear, but it's also to frame this in a perspective to say, hey, guess what? You're in charge. I'm not in charge. I mean, you go to medical doctor, you give your power away to your medical doctor, but you could give your power away to me too, right? I mean, it's nothing new on that. You're just like, oh, it doesn't matter. Just tell me what to do. I don't want to think about it. No, you should be thinking about it. And the more you think about it, the more you probably be more engaged in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's part of that kind of that exhaustion that we're like, it's just too much information. I don't know what to eat, so I'm not going to do anything.
Right.
Or I'm going to buy what's on sale because I don't know what to do.
And we think that these studies mean something. I mean, truly, we think that there's something too low fat or low carb. And then we go to the grocery store and we see low fat, low carb on the package. And we think we're doing well. I mean, most of us don't look into the scientific research the way that you are sharing.
Yeah. And
right
when you look at it, then you find lots of questions.
Right.
We don't have definitive answers. And not that there's not value there. It's just that we take the sound bite of that and we jump to conclusions and we say, this is what that shows. When then you read the actual literature and you're like, oh, wait, they were kind of conflicted about this. And this is what it showed. And yeah, that was right. But there's these other variables that didn't make a difference. And we're just blowing that out of proportion, right? But that's what we do. We it's soundbite. We're mm-hmm. in a soundbite culture that it's about speed. It's about being first to the table on something instead of like doing a long drawn out expose that's, you know, pages and pages and pages, which, you know, who's going to read that? And that's not the culture we're in.
Right. And yet that would take into account all of these, as you say, outliers. So on the one hand, it's very freeing to realize that and to recognize that it's all about N of one. And on the other hand, it's like a jail cell to people with low willpower because all of a sudden you've got to take everything into your own hands and you really can't trust everything blindly. You have to be a scientist of yourself, basically.
Yeah, so what do you trust?
Right.
What would you trust?
I guess I would trust how I feel.
Yeah, meaning, and be more specific about what you feel. What do you think? What would be your barometers on that?
I mean, you know, it's from the macrobiotic literature, if I'm being honest, but it's you should be able to fall right asleep when your head hits the pillow at night.
Yes.
You should wake up feeling refreshed.
Yes.
You should have a good memory.
Yes.
Sorry, I almost forgot the word. And you should have a good sense of humor. That was one of them. If you don't have a sense of humor, according to macrobiotic dictums, you don't have your health. If you can't look at things and say, well, that was messed up, as opposed to, oh my gosh, this is a crisis. And don't get me wrong, I go, you know, we all have our moments where something happens and we really
sure.
are convinced that that is the end of the world. And sometimes you just have to cycle through that. But for the most part, if you're able to make mistakes and laugh or forgive others and laugh and, you know, that sort of thing, then it shows that you have a certain flexibility, you know, overall.
Yes.
Which is a sign of health.
I love those guidelines. So that's something you can kind of assess and say, so how am I doing? What's the check-in?
Right.
And the check-in is, am I laughing today? Or what have you? Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you've heard the story. I can't remember what it is, you know, laughter is your best medicine. The guy that's in the hospital with, I think, pancreatic cancer or something. And they had to kick him out because he would watch funny movies, right? All he did was watch funny movies. It's maybe Norman Cousins. I can't remember the book. It's an older book.
Uh-huh.
But they kicked him out because he's laughing all the time.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, he beat the cancer. Now, was it because he was laughing or not? But, heck, I'd rather laugh my way
into death of, even,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Give me a good three stooges, I'll take that every day, right?
Right,
But again, that's a check-in, right? So how am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
And am I just going on somebody else's past judgment and told me here's what's going to happen? I mean,
right.
This is conventional medicine is giving us black and white, and it's not wrong. It's just not giving us the color,
mm-hmm.
right? It's the color of our life. And it's like, okay, well, how do I shade this? How do I make this difference? How do I work within that? And yes, I may come to you and I want your expert opinion that may be unemotional and completely physiological, and I can use that, but I can use that as one piece amongst many different pieces.
Right.
And I value your information, but I'm not going to just jump on that ship and say, this is what I'm going to do.
Or I am, and I'm going to monitor it as
yeah,
an N of
right,
one
right.
and say to myself, does this still make sense? Does this
exactly.
still make sense? Is
exactly.
this still working for
and
me?
And how am I going to assess that? Because probably, you know, we're not using laughter as a good assessment tool. They're not, you know, your MD's not asking, you know, how much have you laughed today?
Right.
But that's important.
I
yes.
know.
But,
I know.
But I have that too, right? I see patients and then they do nothing, right? I saw somebody at a conference I was at a former patient, hadn't seen her in 10 years. And she came up to me and she said, oh, Paul, you know, I saw you 10 years ago. And I got to tell you, I did nothing. I mean, nothing that you told me, I did nothing. And I'm like, oh, okay. And she said, but I got to tell you, you were right. And she said, you know, I eventually started doing some of those things and it's made all the difference and blah, 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 and this kind of thing. And, you know, you were right. And I said, you know what? It's not about me being right. What it's about is that you've made those changes and you realize it's made a difference.
Yeah.
And you did the experiment and you're at a level to say, this is good. So maybe I just planted a seed. You had to figure out how to water it. You had to like give it its time or whatever to get to the point to say, now I'm ready to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the stages of change model, if you've heard of.
Oh yeah. You've mentioned it before.
Yeah. The
too,
pre-contemplation, yeah. contemplation, then planning, then action, then maintenance, then integration.
Right.
Where are you at on that? And that's an important assessment that I make when I see a patient. I mean, I don't deliberately ask questions, but I kind of have an idea. Are they a pre-contemplator? Are they a contemplator? Are they in the action phase that they're already doing something? And I'm going to kind of support that. And the visit goes in a different direction depending on where they're at, right? Because I need to also know that they have to be engaged. What are they doing to take responsibility for their health? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not. I mean, I don't know. I guess you could hire me to come to your kitchen at home, and I'd be happy to go through your kitchen and throw things away and do this. But it kind of costs a lot of money. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. But this is just, you know, it's getting people engaged. It's getting them to say, oh, I can make a difference, or these are the things that do make a difference. And then how long do you have to do that to realize that it did make a difference? Right, I this is what I call redirect, right? Because oftentimes we have a story about health that's the absence of disease.
Yeah.
Instead of saying it's about vitality.
Yeah.
It's about energy. It's about laughter. It's about, you know, all these other things.
Good memory.
Memory. And to say, okay, well, all right, I'll try this on and see if it fits.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really good at giving people, I can run an experiment, right? I'm pretty good at giving people experiments. And again, I try to control for as many variables as I can, but at the end of the day, I can't. But we say, okay, let's try this on. Let's see if it works. Let's see if it fits. Give it a month, whatever. And then if it doesn't fit, then we try something else. And, you know, what I bring to the table is I've done the experiments other times, right? So I see somebody and I'm like, I've seen you before, right? So I kind of know the experiment to run. Let's run it and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't make promises. I don't know. I mean, some people will react strongly and react unfavorably to things, right? Anything can cause anything. But I'm willing to be there to say, hey, let's take this step and see if it makes a difference for you. And here's what we would expect to improve.
Right.
But, you know, generally I'm doctor number 8, right? I'm not the first doctor on the list. They've already been around the block, right? They've already had the diagnosis. They've already got all sorts of things. They've been on different treatments, and now it's like, oh, now I want to do something different, or I want to get off the drugs. And I'm like, well, I really can't take you off drugs. That's, I mean, I can't prescribe them. That's not my goal, But what can you do that may influence your health that you're not doing right now? Mm. And, you know, empowering them, right? I mean, it's like I'm a backseat driver. And the goal is that eventually you kick the backseat driver out, yeah?
Right. You'd start developing certainty.
Yeah, your own certainty. And you're like, I don't need somebody else to tell me this. I know that when I do this, this is what happens. This is how I feel.
Right, right.
Right. So my story is that I know what my digestive system feels like when it's not working properly. And I'm highly motivated not to re-experience, you know, not to go back there. And I know what that is. I can do things and I'll revisit that. I'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember this from 30 years ago.
Right. For me, it's eating too late at night. I used to do that all the time before I became macrobiotic. And then after I stopped eating late at night, I noticed that my sleep and my energy level the next day, everything changed. So like you say, I know I could go back to, oh, I'm hungry and it's 10 o'clock. I'm going to go to bed in an hour, but I'm going to eat anyway. And I know how I would feel in the morning. Yeah.
Yeah. It's experimentation, right? It's a health is a DIY kind of thing. And yeah. How much do you want to do? And how much are you going to outsource that to somebody else to tell you what to do? And that's this culture of ours, is that we've become fragmented, or we have all these different tribes, that you're in the low-fat tribe, you're in the low-carb tribe, you're in the carnivore tribe, you're in the vegan tribe. It's like, how do we get these tribes? You're like, but part of it is like, how am I exposed to other things? And is this the way? And I'm not going to pay attention to other possibilities? Or perhaps maybe I'm wrong. Or perhaps there's another way to do that. And that's this idea of being, you know, more flexible with your thinking, right? Being more of a critical thinker to say, hey, I have to really doubt what I think as well. I mean, I hear things from patients and I'd be like, oh, well, that's just anecdotal. You know, I don't believe that. But I'm like, you're telling me that. I'm going to believe you. I don't know that I can, you know, ascertain everything that you're doing. But to say, hey, that makes some sense. Or I've seen patients that have been on the bean diet. Bean diet. Yeah, there's a nutritionist in Eau Claire. This is when I'm in the Twin Cities. That people would go out there, and she was basically prescribing people to eat like 6 cups of beans a day. I think it was three cups. Maybe it's 3 cups, 6. I can't remember. Right.
Has to be.
But interesting.
But
patients come to me. Patients come to me, and they say, "Oh my gosh, I've done that, and I can eat gluten now." I'm like, "What? You're eating 3 cups of beans, right?"
Wow.
And you can now eat gluten, and you couldn't eat gluten before? Like, what's going on? So, and again, I'm like, oh, well, that couldn't be true. I'm like, well, no, that's interesting. So what's the variable here, right? So, and I mean, so this is the idea, though. So what is the mechanism of that? And actually, so I get her book, right? Because I'm interested in this.
Yeah.
And it's funny that she's talking about the same kinds of things that I talk about, but in a different sort of way. Like, I'm actually using fat to do the same thing that she's doing, that she's using a lot of soluble fiber.
Oh.
We're trying to work on what we call this like toxic bile, right? Or this bile movement,
yes.
liver stagnation kind of thing. But it's interesting that I have a different way of doing it, but I'm sort of doing the same thing. So, I mean, that's really interesting. But I'm like, wow, you can accomplish that perhaps by eating beans. And am I going to tell people, well, you eat 3 cups of beans a day and you can eat gluten? I don't know that I would go that far,
right.
But I've heard that from a patient, to just say, hey, you know, that's interesting. I have to really check my beliefs too and say, it's not just a one size fits all.
Right.
And I may give you something, but maybe that here's the experiment that we do. And if it doesn't work, well, here's another potential experiment.
Right.
Maybe it's the bean experiment. I don't know, but soluble fiber. I mean, I'm a fan of soluble fiber, and beans are the best way to get soluble fiber in. But you're like, oh, I can't eat plants. You're poisonous. Right.
Right.
I don't know. Right. It's like, I don't think so. It's just, we're jumping to conclusions.
So the certainty lies in the N of one.
Yes.
And remaining conscious as we make these choices in life.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you so much, Paul. We'll see you next month.
Thanks, Christina.
Thanks for tuning in. WDRT.